Hi everyone, welcome to HubShots episode 307. Now this is a monster episode. We're talking about HubSpot's Content Hub. So here's what we're going to go through. We're going to talk about what Content Hub is. We're going to see what it replaces, which in this case is CMS Hub. And there's a bit of Marketing Hub in there. The main features of Content Hub, why it's a good choice for building websites, the current gaps that we see in the product, pricing and tiers. Now, this is evolving as we speak, how it compares to WordPress, and whether you should move, and some final thoughts on Content Hub. My name is Ian Jacob from Search and Be Found, and with me is Craig Bailey from Zen Systems. How are you, Craig?
Really well, Ian, and so excited about this episode. And as you said, it's going to be a monster episode, probably go for an hour, hour and a half. So listeners, if you're not used to that, feel free to bookmark it, come back to it, or check out the show notes. We've put together quite an extensive blog post on this, more than 10,000 words, 75 plus screenshots. We've also turned it into an 80-page beautiful PDF guide, so you can download that. By the way, Ian, we've started doing this. No sign-up required. You can download it. There is an optional form if you want to get notified of updates to it, which we will be doing regularly for this guide, but just download it. It's not gated at all. And of course, you're watching this on YouTube, but we'll be updating with little mini videos on our channel as well. But look, before we get into Content Hub, Ian, I thought we'd take a step back and just chat about this acronym CMS, because CMS Hub has been the name to date. And I think that's confusing. And it's probably part of the reason why they've changed the name, to be fair. But for those who don't know, CMS stands for Content Management System. And even that's confusing. You say to a marketing manager, oh, do you want to build a website? Yeah, I want to build a website. Oh, great. You use a content management system. No, you use a website content manager. They just get confused. And so while that's an industry term, I think a lot of people are like, HubSpot CMS Hub, what is that? And they just didn't know. So the renaming is, I think, a good move, and it repositions it. However, when we think about CMS and as we think about Content Hub, we're really just talking about websites at this stage, aren't we, Ian?
Exactly, Craig. And that's what it is, right? That's what we've come to know. And when we talk about it on our websites, we don't even use CMS. In there, we always talk about HubSpot websites. So why are we talking about content, or why is it becoming a part of content? Because I think time has evolved. As things have gone on and there's a big focus on content, I think things have changed. And I think so this is a really good place for us to start as to why they're going to call it Content Hub and what we think about that. So Craig, tell us, what is Content Hub when we're talking about HubSpot?
Yeah, look, I think it's HubSpot's way, very simply, of saying, well, avoiding the confusion of CMS, which we've just talked about. People didn't understand it. By the way, later we're going to talk about CTAs, a feature of Content Hub. I think that's a bad word as well. I don't think people know what CTAs are.
True.
So there's a few terms, but CMS, definitely, they were confused. I also think they want to make it clear to the market that HubSpot has a compelling, fully featured website offering. Right at the end of this episode, we're going to talk about Mindshare. People think WordPress can do anything, and it can. But then when you say, oh, HubSpot has a website builder, they're like, oh, is it any good? No, I haven't heard of it. So there's a Mindshare lacking. And we've been using it for years. We'll chat about our experiences. And then third, and importantly, they're signaling that HubSpot is extending beyond just websites into a full content management system. So we're going to talk about podcast hosting as one example later, but all your content, marketing and sales assets, they want to make it easy for you to put into the product. Today's episode is mostly focused on website functionality, but in the future, it's really going to extend past that. So that's why I think Content Hub is the repackaging naming they're using. I think it's good, but it's evolving. It's just been launched as you're watching or listening to this, so it's evolving. As I mentioned, we've got this beautiful PDF guide, and that will be being updated regularly. So download that and check back on these show notes. Make sure you've signed up for HubShots for updates as well. But let's get into it. So what's the difference between Content Hub and CMS Hub? That's probably where we should start, Ian.
That's right, Craig. So from what we can see now is that Content Hub, oh, well, let's call it CMS is a part of Content Hub, and Content Hub includes a lot of other tools in there. And within that, we'll go quite in depth into some of these tools. Some of them we're already using. Some of them will be introduced as in the coming months as we speak. As we've seen, some of the things I think are still in development and they're coming. So just be aware of that. And with website, as always, I feel things are always evolving, right? It never stands still and it's getting better day by day. So be aware that this is not something where it's released and then that's what it is. I think it's going to keep growing and it's going to get better and better, just like we've seen the sales tools, the marketing tools, the service tools all grow and expand to be some of the world-class leading tools that we use today.
I totally agree. And so if Content Hub is basically repackaging CMS Hub, if you're currently using CMS Hub, you might be like, oh, so what's going to happen? Does that mean that's going away? No, it's not. You can continue to use CMS Hub. They're not going to phase that out. You can continue to use it, but you just won't see CMS Hub on their website. I think that's it. You'll see any reference to CMS Hub removed.
That's right.
And also some of the new features rolling out, they won't be making them available in CMS Hub. You'll only get access to them if you've switch to Content Hub, and there will be a very easy way to switch from CMS Hub to Content Hub. I don't know the full details of that yet, but they're going to make it easy because that's definitely what they're promoting.
Now, people are going to ask us about tiers, Craig, so let's just hit that one on the head straight away.
There's so many features we're going to go through. There's going to be about 50 plus separate little features we're going to go through. As we said, this is a big episode. We're not going to indicate at this point whether it's a starter, pro, or enterprise feature, because we're not entirely sure for some of them and they might be changing. So we've seen features like memberships used to be an enterprise feature. I think they're bringing that down to pro, Ian, but I'm not entirely sure. We haven't got to the details. So we're not going to cover that. We will give some details at the end just about basic overview of how they're putting it into different tiers, but it won't be till the future that we can be a bit more certain of it. So I just want to get that out of the way. Anything we go through today might actually be a starter, might be a pro, might be an enterprise feature.
And I think what we're tending to find, Craig, is that there are versions of these tools that basically have a starter, pro, and enterprise version of them. So you might get a taster. So I think, like when you just mentioned memberships, I think memberships in the pro will just be there's only one level of access. Like you can only have one list. Whereas for enterprise, you might have different levels of access and different assets, right? So just be aware of that. I think what they're trying to do is give people an experience of, oh, here's what it could be like, or here's the basic version. Now, you might not need the pro version. Like we all know, you know, you get automation when you go to pro. You're saving time, you're saving effort, you're trying to automate tasks. And I think you'll see the same thing to do with Content Hub will happen. And so there'll be this consistency across the platform. When we talk about features, there'll be some part of that feature that's available in starter, more in pro, and then even more in enterprise. So just be aware of that as we're talking about stuff.
I also wonder, Ian, whether some of this will be fluid. Do you remember when they launched CMS Hub Starter a couple of years ago?
Yes.
And then Starter, correct. I think it had like 10 pages maybe?
Yes, which we complained about.
Everyone's like, that's crazy. Then I think they made it 15, then maybe 30, then they made it 50. But now I've noticed in Content Hub Starter, they've pulled that back to 30. But the difference is it's across landing pages and website pages, whereas on CMS, it was different. So it's fluid. I think they'll find the right balance. Like I think they did the right thing with CMS Hub those years ago and they got it right. And so they're probably just testing a few things with Content Hub initially.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel that if there was a bit of disjointedness between landing pages and website pages in Starter, I actually wonder whether that's been changed, which I haven't tested in Starter, but might be worth something that we can revisit in a future
episode. Well, I think Content Hub, landing pages and website pages will be very similar, like they are in Marketing Pro or above.
And we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we will. We'll go through that. And also how they're bringing out some changes. They're pulling landing pages out of Marketing Pro and they're putting it into Content Hub. Correct. Even at the starter level. So some interesting things happening. By the way, we're not going to go into why they're doing it, business reasons. I know some people will grumble. They'll be like, oh, that's just a money grab. They're trying to get us to buy more stuff. Maybe. Hey, they're a business. You can go onto LinkedIn and whinge about that if you want. Or here's a better idea. Just buy some HubSpot shares. Anyway, let's jump into it. And first of all, we've got a bunch of shots. We're going to go through some core CMS functionality, then managing content, and then advanced functionality. But let's start at the foundation, shall we, Ian?
That's right. And most people always ask us, And this is a misconception, I think, Craig, is that does a HubSpot website look like other websites? And I don't know why people say this, because to me, a website's a website, right? It looks the same. I'm sure people don't go out there and go, does a WordPress website look like a Elcom website, for example, right?
I wonder, though, Ian, they're possibly thinking about that very basic template-y look. You know how you see a bunch of websites, WordPress especially, because there's millions of them where you go, oh, it's just a simple template. Doesn't look great. Doesn't look designed.
True.
I think perhaps people bring that over to HubSpot, especially when we're going to talk about templates and template market, theme marketplace. They're like, oh, doesn't look good. It's just a theme. Do you have clients kind of indicate that to you? We've had a few.
Yeah, all the time. And then we show them some of the things we've built and they're like, oh, is that really what you can do? I'm like, yes, just think of it like any other website. If you can do it somewhere else, you can do it in HubSpot. And so let's talk about themes and templates. Now, that's one of the places in HubSpot that has really grown and evolved over the last few years. And so a lot of our sites actually that we build and that our sites like the HubShot site, for example, is built on the clean theme. And you would have probably heard us talk about the clean theme over time. So I know in Zen, for example, they focus clearly on the clean theme. At Search and Be Found, we do a lot on the power theme. And we together collectively have built on those themes many sites and we know the ins and outs. Now, you might also say, why do you only choose those two themes? To be honest, I have tried, and I know Craig has tried two other themes. And what I tend to find, or what we have found collectively, is they might look great, but actually on the back end, they might not be built the same way. So how flexible are they? Are they really well made so that they're considering how fast things are loading? Are there modules to do different things? How customizable are the modules? How up to date are they keeping it? What's the support like? What is the documentation like? These are all the stuff that we look at. We don't just look at how great it looks. We look at how easy it's to live with, right? And so these are the two themes that we've actually chosen collectively in our businesses that we work on. And I think if you try them out, I think you would find the same thing. And I'm sure there are other themes in the marketplace, but these are the two that we've chosen to run with.
Totally agree, Anne. And this is the thing. People are surprised when they see some of the sites we build. They're like, oh, you used just a theme from the marketplace. Did you custom develop that? No, just a theme. Oh, wow. And to be fair, a couple of years ago, we did. We used to custom dev all our themes. We didn't use themes from the marketplace, but we switched a couple of years ago and we decided on those themes. By the way, people will say, oh, is clean theme or power theme, are they the best themes in the marketplace? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't tried all 100 of them, but they are excellent. We use them for all our sites now, as you said. Now, that's not to say you have to buy paid themes. We do. For all of our clients, we've just got our small set of paid themes that we use now, but there's tons of free ones and there's also tons of modules as well. For example, there are modules for calculators. You want to add a mortgage calculator to your site, etc., like that. Tons of them. And later on in the show, we'll go through some of the gaps. There's no module for Instagram, for example. I'll chat about that at the end. But just know that you can get started. You could get CMS Hub. You could get Content Hub Starter, get a free theme from the marketplace and build a very beautiful and functional website. No problem at all. By the way, I'll just mention one other cool theme or one cool feature of HubSpot that I really like. And that's that you can have multiple themes in your portal and build pages from different themes. So what do I mean by that? You can have the home page based on one theme, your about page based on another theme. This is really handy. You could have a landing page, which you build on another theme. So this is a big advantage, in my opinion, over WordPress, where with WordPress, as you would know if you've used it, you basically make one theme active and then all the pages on the site switch to using that theme. So that's something I really like, a big handy feature, not a piece of functionality people are all aware of.
All right. So one of the things that we've heard is, if you have used WordPress, you're thinking about child themes, right? And why do you create a child theme? Let's go back to that. You create a child theme because you want to make sure you get the updates, right? And any updates that you have made in your child theme stays current while being able to receive updates from the main theme, right? So this is one of the reasons having a child theme helps you manage that appropriately, but also get the updates. And that's one thing I love about Clean and Power. there's always updates coming through, ways to make things better, ways to improve things. And so having the child really helps you manage that well. And again, it's a really simple process. It's well documented. And often a lot of these theme makers will even, the 2 hours that they give you, will give you the ability to create those child themes for you to get you started.
Yeah, because if you're having multiple websites in your portal, as we do, you know, we've got HubShots, Zen, ZenCreate, all of these in our portal, we have one theme, one copy of clean theme we've purchased, and then we have multiple child themes because the child themes
handle
all those theme customizations and fonts and all of that. So it's all separated out. Then when Kevin from Clean Theme updates his theme, it just uploads the parent theme. All our child themes stay intact, and it's a beautiful way to keep up to date but not break your site.
All right, now let's talk about content types. So people are looking at thinking, oh, okay, what does Content Hub have, right? So let's look at the following content types. We've got web pages, we've got blog posts, we've got images, videos, and we've got files, right? And then when we talk about web pages, we also include landing pages in there as well. Now let's think about how do we manage this? And then if we talk about that, we're talking about hosting of content. So you can either upload or enter it via files. There's version control. That's really important. People don't realize how important it is until they've got to roll back something or go, hang on, what was on that page before? Protecting content with permissions and then reporting and making sure that you can constantly improve and get better. And then we also think about content types that can be extended to emails, social posts, knowledge-based articles, and even advertising, so ads. So that's another place.
That's right. And keep in mind, we're talking about the foundational features that all CMSs should have, and Content Hub is no different, has all of that. Let's keep going on. Sitetree, just a basic way to look at a folder-level visualization of all your pages. So many people that we show the websites to in HubSpot don't realize you can do this. They're looking at a list view, but yep, it's right there. So you can see the screenshots there.
Hidden in plain sight, hey, Craig?
It is hidden in plain sight. Great way to put it. A few quick tips. When you're using that site tree, so if you've got this in your portal, have a look. You can view both websites and landing pages. Have you seen that? People will go, oh, I'm just viewing websites. Oh, I can't view landing pages. You can put them there. Can't include blog posts in that listing, which is fine. And the resolved language is often needs changing if you're updating the filters. What else? Drag and drop editor. This should be table stakes for any CMS, and there's still some that don't have it. HubSpot's got it.
Now, I'll tell you one thing, just so people listen, and if they're using what we know as now the previously called CMS or website, if your theme that you're using hasn't been updated for a couple of years and it was built in the old style, and you're thinking, hang on, why don't I have the drag and drop that Ian and Craig are talking about? It is probably because it hasn't been updated to the drag and drop style, which was introduced a few years ago, which would mean that it needs to be rebuilt so that you can take advantage of that. So if you are in that position, there is a way to do it. They'll have to rebuild it to include that, but it is available to you. Don't feel that just because you can't see it in CMS that it's not available. So reach out to your developer.
Yeah, look, that's such a good point, Ian. We've got a client where they had their website built in some hard-coded thing. It wasn't even a custom dev that was useful. It was a custom dev build that's just got hard-coded references to, it's just a debacle. Anyway, whenever they try and get their website updated, they want to move it around, they have to pay thousands of dollars to this developer to change their site. And we're just like, just buy clean theme and we'll do a retrofit. We'll build, rebuild it all, drag and drop. And they're like, oh, we're actually saving money by not only buying the theme, which is only $1,000 US, but then all our time just to switch over the pages. It's actually saving the money really quickly. So an ROI. So I think that's such a good point. And if you don't have drag and drop, look at the investment just to switch it over. Worth it. You'll recoup your money very quickly.
We also talk about save sections. So save sections are really handy to save sections that you want to reuse across pages. Makes things so much easier for reuse and repurposing across the platform. Publishing controls is the next thing. So requiring, and this is something that's been introduced fairly recently, but just being able to get approval for content publishing. And this is more probably for bigger businesses where they go through a process to approve and publish. That's a great thing that HubSpot now has within that. The next thing is schedule publishing. So I'm sure people don't realize they can schedule published pages and unpublish them on certain dates and times. And that is also built within the platform. And the next thing I wanted to talk about is you can bulk publish as well. So there's the other option that you can do is bulk publish a whole bunch of pages.
Yeah. So you might be wondering, why are we talking about things like, surely that's obvious, a system would have it. Yeah, it is. These are the foundational pieces. Every CMS should have them. HubSpot has them. In the schedule unpublish, one thing it also adds, which is nice, is you can schedule that to unpublish on a certain date, automatically redirect to another page so you don't lose your Google juice or have a 404 showing. All right, a final few things, version history. This is a revision history on just about anything, web pages, landing pages, etc. You can access that pretty quickly. Lots of people don't know about that. And they go, oh, I've changed it. How do I get it back? Version history there. It's really good. And you can see the full history. Just choose the one that you want. I think it goes back to forever. I don't think it's got a limit.
It's a massive, massive benefit if you're trying to figure out what happened when.
And then finally, SEO features. We've got a whole section, Shot 8, later in the show, but just right up front, SEO tools are something that should be table stakes in any web content management system. HubSpot's no different. Page titles, meta descriptions, canonical URLs, redirects, featured images, XML sitemaps, it's all there. We'll go through that later in the show.
All right, now let's talk about managing content, Craig. And what's the difference between landing pages versus web pages and blog posts?
I think this is really useful to chat through. And this question comes up a lot. What's the difference between a landing page and a web page in HubSpot? And the answer is very little. So I think still, and previously, but still landing pages by default didn't get added to the XML sitemap. And interestingly, you can organize landing pages into folders. Web pages do get added to XML sitemap by default, but I don't think there's a folder option for it. That might be changing. But previously, there was differences in reporting. I think landing pages had a bit more of a conversion focus, and web pages showed more things like engagement, video stats, etc. But I think they're pretty much aligned now. And really, there's not many differences at all. And now that Content Hub brings landing pages over from Marketing Hub into Content Hub with website pages, I have a feeling, I have no inside knowledge on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they just combine that into pages. They call it page, not web page versus landing page, just page, like WordPress does. And then there might be a few little tick boxes in the settings where you might, for example, say, oh, it's a landing page, don't put in the sitemap or block it from Google, that kind of thing. Now, as I said, I don't know that for sure. That's just my opinion. But I think it would be much easier. I can't, unless I've missed something, I can't see any benefit of having them separate, like a landing page versus a website page. Do you, Ian?
Not any longer, Craig. I think previously with the way the product was organizing, yes. But in Content Hub, I don't see. I think, yes, I think the great would be, can you do a checkbox on a view? You could see different stats, like what the submission rate is. That's good, but I think they're one of the same now. Once they're in Content Hub, I think they should be treated that way.
Yeah, and I'll say I think all the website builds we do these days, even though if it's a landing page in the sense of a marketing term, landing page, we build them as website pages in HubSpot anyway. All right, so that's landing pages versus website pages, and then blog posts. Probably don't need to explain it. I think people are aware that a blog post is a little bit different from a web page. It's simpler. That's because it needs to support an RSS feed. The content goes out into a standard format. It's also very date-based. Blog posts use date for ordering, listing pages, etc. And also they tend to have a tagging feature for categories, although HubSpot even has that kind of rolling out. I don't think that's really a differentiator for too long. I think it's more the formatting and the legacy nature of a blog post. There's also modules. It's quite nice, the tagging, that you can use modules, say clean theme we use. You can use the featured blog post thing. It'll pull through blog posts into, say, you put that module on a page, bottom of a page, say a product page, you pull through related blog posts. You can use tagging then. And so that is quite a nice way with blogs to separate out the type of content. Let's go on to preview pages in terms of managing content.
And this is really important, especially when you're trying to, people in the business say, hey, show me that page. I want to see how it's going along. And you don't have to actually publish it. And so it gives you an ability to quality control it, share it with the team, get feedback within HubSpot, and it does it really nicely. So one of those little things, again, that make a massive difference.
Featured images, kind of standard throughout the product now. Put in your featured images. That's what will show in those thumbnails when you share a page on social.
And you know what I like, Craig? It actually tells you if the featured image is not the right sizing.
Ah, yes.
And so these are little things, right? You can do something, the system might accept it, but the system being smart looks to see, oh, is that going to work on social? Oh, here the, let's call it this scale of images you need to have and choose the right one. So, and even in some of the themes, actually what's interesting that I was looking at is in the power theme, for example, because generally people would choose a featured image as the blog header, for example, right? But let's say the blog header is not what you want to use as the featured image. You can actually override the blog header in the theme and you can use a featured image that's actually works well for social. So these are some of the things or the nuances that we see within the platform, within the themes.
All right, let's move on to menus and navigation. So you might think, why are we talking about the menu builder? Like, why are we talking about that as a feature? Well, if you've used other tools, you are probably familiar with how clunky their menu builders can be or how difficult to use. And really, the only reason for highlighting this is that HubSpot is really nice to use. It's not amazing. It's just usable, which is all you want, right? So you can get to it. It's hidden away in settings, or you can get it through the more tools when you're on website pages. Very easy to use. A few nice things. You can see revisions for menus as well, by the way. So if you've deleted something from a menu, lost it, you can get a revision. And then just a few little things. When you add a menu item, you can actually add a page link with UTM parameters. So nice little features like that. Now, I'll also mention sometimes there's a built-in simple menu builder if you're editing your footer or something like that. We hardly ever use that. We just use advanced menus.
All right. Now we're going to talk about files. And this is rather boring, but it's actually one of the really important things in terms of how you manage your files, but also some of the features within files that are available. So you want to make sure you have a good folder structure. But also in HubSpot, you're going to find that there are things about how you can rename and give access to certain files. So for example, you can rename, you can set expiration dates, you can block it from being indexed by Google, and you can even replace files. So why is this important, right? You could be using it as a document link and you want to put an updated version. So I know lots of customers share price lists and they'll share a link and you want to make sure that that link doesn't expire, or you might want to expire it, but you might also just want to go, oh, I just got the latest price list. Let me just upload the latest price list to the same link. So no matter who has access to it, it's always current.
That's such a good example. We do it with our guides, PDF guides, if we're updating them.
Yes.
We'll replace them, keeps them up to date. You can also see where a particular file is used if it's on a HubSpot page. Nice and handy. All right, moving on. Smart content, really nice way to personalize content for viewers. I think this is a great demo feature, Ian, but hardly anyone uses it. And it's so powerful.
That is so true, Craig.
But there is a reason I think people are just like, oh, that's too much. Let's get the page up. We can always come back and make it a bit more personalized later. And I totally get it. We're all busy. And by the way, that's why we don't actually cover it until stage 4 in the HubShots framework. But it's very powerful, and the summary is you can switch out content based on criteria such as the language in their browser, the location they're coming from, looks up the IP, the device, is it mobile versus desktop, life cycle stage, you know, is this a lead or is it a customer? Oh, it's a customer. Let's show them a VIP offer, that kind of thing, referral source, or lists. We typically use lists for managing all our smart content. Why? Because you can filter on just about any criteria if they're returning back. We won't go through it in detail, but we've got a screenshot here where you're just using country on a page in your site to switch out the content that might see. Typical example, to go back to pricing that you talked about before. Oh, yeah, we'll just switch out. Yes. They're coming from the US, show them USD. Oh, they're coming from the UK, show them GBP and stuff like that.
And some of you might know, we've tried before switching out forms on websites when they're from particular countries. and showing them dummy forms, etc. So we've done tests like that, which has actually worked quite well.
And also some people are like, oh, look, we can't take leads, or we need to show a different form if they're in a, say, an EU location and things like that. So, yeah, lots of scenarios there. If you want to try it out, we've got a page on the Zen site where we actually switch out based on, you can set how old you are, your gender and things like that, and it'll switch out the imagery. We tend to do that because we like to personalize. When they turn up on the site, do they see a picture that represents them more closely? More on that in another episode perhaps. But speaking about smart content and then personalization.
So let's talk about personalization, right? We talk about personalization in emails, but now you can do personalization on web pages. And the thing here is you can use any information from company data right through to contact data to personalize pages if you know who they are. Again, another very underutilized part of the site, Craig. And we've done this for customers that have people that come back to a service page. So we know what company they're from. So you switch out their company name and actually say that in the text before they submit the service request. And that's worked really well because it feels like they're getting a personalized experience because they are visiting that service page quite often.
More content management, using forms and meetings in pages. These are nice. You can just have a module, drop a form under a page, choose from any of your forms in HubSpot. For example, if you go to HubShots and you book in on one of our quick check sessions, that's a meeting embed on a website page. Very simple to set up. Just drag it on and make it useful.
And I want to highlight in that meeting embed, we actually asked, as it goes through the process, we ask people questions to fill out. So we're collecting more information. We also give people the opportunity to invite other people on the team. So this is one way to save yourself a lot of time. And it also looks in Craig's and my calendar. And so it finds the time that's available for us. Because just think of the time that we've saved, Craig. Having not to do the backwards and forwards with people, then for us to manually look at our calendars, we've just taken all of that out of the way now and just give people the ability to book with us directly. And you can also now collect using payments. You can collect in the process. You can collect payments with this meeting booking request. So there you go.
All right. More on managing content, adding video to pages. Look, you can do this in two ways. You can actually get HubSpot to host the video. They've had this for a while. It's quite good. Or you can embed other videos, e.g. YouTube, Wistia, etc. And we get this asked by customers. They're like, oh, should I embed YouTube or should I just host it on HubSpot? And it depends on your requirements. So I'll give you two examples. We tend to embed YouTube videos in our HubShots pages. Why? Because we're trying to build an audience on YouTube. We actually want people to click on their video, go over to YouTube and subscribe. So that's good for us. But if that was on an about page, about us, and there's a video there just giving an overview, we host it because we don't want them going off to YouTube and perhaps not filling out a form on our site. So have a mix. One of the really nice things is if you use YouTube as we do, there's an integration via the HubSpot social tool that'll pull in your YouTube stats. I don't think they do it for any other hosting platforms, maybe not even Wistia, even though they built their video stuff on Wistia, but yeah. And if you do use their hosting, you can use advanced video features. If you host in HubSpot, that includes things like view times and stuff like that. Moving on, save sections. We actually chatted about this earlier when it comes to just table stakes, like being able to save sections in a CMS. And so, yep, that is part of the way of managing content. And then finally, CTAs. We could do a whole episode on this, Ian. Oh, hang on.
I think we have, Craig. Don't we have a whole episode?
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to see a video of Ian sporting an awesome moustache, you can go and watch the video because that was back whenever it was, 278 or something like that.
Right, so let's talk about call to actions, right? So these are really important. And you know actually what's interesting, Craig, talking to customers, one of the big things that they have mentioned to me is that call to actions, when done right, have actually made a massive difference to their site and a difference to their conversion and people making inquiries or leading them in the right direction, right? And it's kind of become really critical to certain industries that we work in where it's really, really important. So this is a really fundamental piece that we're talking about. Now, the CTA or the call to action tool in HubSpot has changed. There's a new CTA tool. A legacy one is still there. And we want to highlight some things. It's given us some flexibility and some new things with the new CTA tool, right? in terms of the kinds of CTAs you can do. So that's gotten a lot broader, right? And more variety. But there are things that it doesn't have that the old CTA tool did have. And I believe they'll come because it says it's not there yet. And some of the things are things like multivariate testing and also using it in a smart content way. So only showing that CTA or switching it out when we meets that criteria. But that's not available the new CTA tool. That's right.
I didn't realize that.
You'll see that in the show notes. It says there that it's not available as at the recording of this episode, but I'm sure it'll come. But be aware of that, because if you're creating CTAs in the new tool and thinking, oh, I can test that, oh, I can make that a smart CTA.
Oh, wow. That's good to know, because I've actually, I've put screenshots here showing we use the multivariate for testing. That pains me that that's not available. We've still got the legacy CTAs, and I guess we won't be switching them. We've started switching some of them because they've got a migration tool. That's interesting.
So it does say, HubSpot does have a note saying they're not available as yet, which would indicate to me that they're trying to find a way to move it to the new tool. So be aware, if you have these things running and you are testing and you are wanting to do a multivariate test, do not swap them into the new CTA tool.
So then out of the reasons why you'd use CTAs, there's four main reasons. One is central management. I just love this. You can create a button and just manage it centrally. Use that button throughout the site. Oh, you want to change the wording on it? Oh, change it in one place. It flows throughout the site. That's great. But even more importantly, then you can report on it. Oh, how many clicks has this button had throughout the website? And then I want to change it because it didn't perform well. Or I just want to update what it's pointing to. Could be a file. Although if you had the file and you'd use replace, you wouldn't even need to do that. So CTAs plus the file tool is really handy. But yeah, the other two reasons were multivariate testing and smart CTAs, which it looks like they're winding out. So this screenshot I've got, probably not relevant.
I don't think it'll be irrelevant, Craig. I actually think that that will get moved. I think that they're trying to find a way to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's one of those things that has really worked across in lots of businesses that we tested with. Let's talk about some advanced content tools. So this is probably, we're moving into the more sophisticated part of Content Hub, and there are going to be more tools going to be introduced, but let's talk about a few and some of the things that people love. First one is content staging, and this allows you to create completely new pages, even completely new websites in content staging without affecting your live website. So there's no chance of it accidentally turning up in Google, no chance of being published by another member of the team because the whole separate section and it's well hidden under a button and you don't need to disrupt your current website or work. And so this has been one of those things when this has happened with our customers, is like, this is a good opportunity to introduce them to the content staging tool and tell them to work in there when they're doing their things. So it's a little hidden away. It's under the more tools, content staging, and then you can access it. And you know what? It's one of those underrated features. But I think, you know what I've seen as we've introduced it for people, and they go and they've changed the way they think and the way they go through their workflow, they actually become really dependent on this tool to manage their website publishing. So they know how to work well out of the content staging tool.
It is really good when you get used to it. And yeah, there's a whole log of things going live. So it's really good. I'll tell you one thing that I love about it is that when you publish or push from staging to live, HubSpot takes care of all the URLs and redirects. So you might have, I've got this page that I'm testing in staging. It's got staging links within the content and the menu and that. You push it live, HubSpot updates all those staging links to be the live publish links. It's great. Now, you might say, yeah, of course it should do that. I agree, of course it should do that. But if you've used other tools, part of the go live process is often, we've got to run a script over our new pages that have gone live to update staging references to publish reference. And it's like, no, HubSpot takes care of that for you.
Yeah. And be aware that if you've hard coded something, it's not going to change that. If it's referencing pages and posts and things within HubSpot, it does know about that.
That's right. If you've got some custom JavaScript that hard codes a staging URL, yeah, it's not going to be that smart, but yeah.
Okay, we're talking about A/B and multivariate testing. These are testing variations of your pages, and it's in there tells you some really quick, the A-B testing is a 50-50 split between, and that's the, probably the most commonly used one. Deductive testing has been probably the least used, but Craig, you'll see here are some of the things that HubSpot actually tells you you can test. You can test things like CTAs, the copy on your page, the media you use. So, you know, one might be a static image, one might be a video, or even the layout of your page. So these are the kind of things you can, and you can do that up to 5 page variations to test those different things within HubSpot.
I'm pretty sure that adaptive testing automatically chooses the winner, right? So you can almost just set it up, let it loose, and it'll work it out. And whereas A-B testing, you, I think, have to decide, or you choose one. Or is that automatic?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. Yeah, you choose the winner based on the test results, like it says right there. And actually, adaptive, it actually is interesting. You can see on that screenshot, it actually says, I think it ends up working out which is working and starts showing those winners to the people.
I think the difference, just for listeners maybe a bit confused, is with adaptive, it's choosing, changing elements on a page as opposed to 2 different pages. But then it chooses the elements, and whatever the combination of elements that works the best, bang, it just, you know, pushes that after it's reached statistical significance.
And the thing to note is adaptive tests are not supported on pages with smart content. So if you've got smart content on a page, you can't use an adaptive test. All right, using Hubble in pages, Craig.
Yeah, Hubble is HubSpot's markup language, and you can use it in pages and emails. Look, it's not a full programming language, but includes basics, you know, variables, functions, if statements, etc. We've used it in a couple of pages to build simple content functionality. All right, as opposed to process functionality. And I'll give you an example. This is a page from one of my wife's sites. It's just an organize in 5 organizing tip. And what this does is just shows a new tip every day. So you visit this one URL and it's got a new tip, 5-minute tip every day. That's all just coded in Hubble. I've got some screenshots there. It just pulls it in from Hubble. We've just got one file in the background. It's got 365 different pieces of content, and then based on the date, just works it out, shows it. Great thing. You can use that in emails as well, which is what we do. We send a daily email. It's great. And there's a screenshot with the code. You can see it's just making a reference to a Hubble page and an actual variable within Hubble there. Very easy to set up. We've had this running for years. It's fantastic. Such a time saver.
I remember when you did this, Craig. It was quite a revolutionary, and probably still is.
Maybe. I don't think people use this much, but it's great for just quickly building content bits. We used to do things like this for, actually, I won't go too much into it, but how we showed various team members and things like that. You could just base on that. Yeah.
So talking about team members, we can do that in HubDB now.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. What's HubDB?
So HubDB is HubSpot's simple built-in database. And you can think of it a bit like a spreadsheet. If you're looking at the show notes, you can see it just looks like a table, keeping a list of assets and where things are located. And in anything, you know, think of it like just a file format, right? But what it does enable you to do is easily update it, firstly, and then be able to quickly pull it out onto different pages. And so this is another way. This is an example from a customer of ours, where they host events and they actually store all of the HubDB, all the people that are speaking in a HubDB table. And what's great about that is they can reuse those profiles across multiple pages, because what they end up doing is these people talk across different streams. And so they just have a single HubDB entry, and then they say, here are the streams people are speaking from. And then it gets pulled into the different pages as needed. So a great way to organize and manage data quickly. And you can see inside a HubSpot page, it calls it a dynamic page, and it'll say, where do I need to get the data from? And that's the actual HubDB table that it's getting the data from. Tell us about multiple sites, Craig.
I think this is a great feature in HubSpot. You can manage multiple sites. I think I don't forget how many we've got in our portal, probably close to 20 now, but we've got all our brand sites and also the HubSpot site as well. And as well as hosting various sites, well, various domains, you can also have various sending domains, all that kind of stuff. So for companies that have more than one brand, or they want to spin up microsites and things like that, HubSpot's Content Hub is a great way to manage that. And it's not only the sites, it's also blogs. And blogs go one step further. You can have multiple blogs. you can actually have multiple blogs per domain. So you might think, what? That's weird. Why would you do that? Well, a simple example might be, oh, for our one site, we're going to have a blog that's news. We've got a separate blog that just mentions people. We've got another blog that might mention specific assets or events, things like that. And because you use tagging, you can then in various places in your site say, oh, I'm just going to pull from my events blog, tagged a certain location and put it here. So very flexible. I just love that about HubSpot. I mean, you can't really do that with many other content tools that I'm aware of. Most people don't know this. So incredibly flexible. We use it a lot. We've got tons of sites and blogs, as I mentioned.
All right. Now we're going to talk about membership tools, and this is considered private content. HubSpot has the functionality built into its pages, so you can set it to require a password. You could require people to register. So a password could be, for example, you tell everybody that who your members just use this one password, right? So everybody uses the same password. The registration, on the other hand, requires them to register. They'll have their own login details. And then there's also an option for members of the organization to use the single sign-on access feature. And then on top of that, here's something that is relatively new in terms of blog posts membership. Now available is you can let people have access to entire blog posts if they're members, and then people that aren't members can only see the preview, which was interesting because I knew it couldn't be done before, but now it can, Craig.
I think this is so handy. This, by the way, on WordPress, we've built sites where we've had special plugins and functionality to put this in place. It's just all built in out of the box now.
Correct. And then again, you could also do based on membership groups or a list in this respect. So that's the next part. So a great way to organize and access your content. All right. So now this is one of the parts. We're going to talk about the AI features inside Content Hub and some of the things people will be most excited about. So integrating AI is a big focus of HubSpot, and it's clearly evident that people want to use it well, right? And so HubSpot has been rolling out a lot of AI features over the last year. One of the things that's been on the side of this has been ChatSpot, which has been kind of, I would call it like their testing that they've been doing on the side, making it available to everyone. But they've been rolling this into HubSpot progressively, which is nice to see. And as Craig, you said, some of them are like glorified spell checking tools and some are just noise in terms of like content creation, etc. I want to just highlight to people with a lot of this stuff, let's talk about creating content, right? I think you as a person need to know what does great content look like, right? And when you know what that looks like, then using these tools is actually a benefit and a speeding up in terms of your workflow and your process and your ability to get the answer quicker. It's just like looking at an image, right? When we look at an image, it's visually you can see, oh, hang on, that doesn't look right. That person's got five fingers. They should, they have six fingers. They should have five, right? But I think in content, when we're talking about these AI tools creating content, people don't have that level of, what should I say, in terms of being very specific about, is that good or not, right? And I have to keep reminding people, they're great to use, but know what great looks like when you're creating content and then use the tools to get to that end outcome. So let's talk about AI and blog posts, Craig. What's one of the things here that you've discovered?
Well, I want to talk about that. And at the start of the show, we said we'd call out stuff if we thought it wasn't very good. And we'll highlight, we've talked about lots of things we like. This AI, I just think it's producing junk, Ian. And so the reason I say that is, look, I think ideation can be good. ChatGPT, great. Maybe even helping you lay it out. Some of those things, yeah, that can be good. But generating the content, which is what people are going to do, they're just looking for an easy way to generate content. It's just junk. It's just noise. And I'm really sad to see this kind of turning up in HubSpot videos that, oh, yeah, use the blog tool. Not only can you generate the idea, give it a keyword, I'll generate the titles, it'll generate it all for you. I'm like, if it's that easy, people will just do it themselves in ChatGPT. They're not going to bother coming to your blog to see a post you've written using tools that they can just use themselves. And plus, Google's weeding it out. It's really, initially it was like, oh, if AI content, it's great. You know, if it's good and useful, we'll keep it. But now they're getting a lot more discerning. And so I would be very careful about using these tools. for creating content and then posting out there. And I've seen these HubSpot demos where they go, oh, look, a few clicks, it's generated a blog post. Oh, quick, generate an image, bang, you've got a blog post out there. I was like, that's really bad advice. So what's my summary? It feels like, oh, I'm really bagging this out. And I am. I just think it's a bad approach. I don't think AI tools are bad, but I think the usage of them in some cases is just noise. And this is an example where the usage I don't think will be particularly good.
But here's one that we do like, and it's the AI post narration, Craig.
This, on the flip side, is excellent.
That's right. And so this is the ability, and this is available on blogs, the ability to narrate the post. And I must say, I was actually quite impressed in terms of the AI voice and the realistic nature of it. But a great way to add something else to your blog to give people another way of consuming your content. And you can use this now. Craig has noted in here on one of the blog posts that we had narrated, it got the pronunciation of lead magnet and called it a lead magnet. So you can see that there are still things to be worked on, but I actually think this is one of those super exciting things where it's just helping us reach people in a different way, because some people just want to listen to stuff, just like they listen to the podcast. Some people want to read stuff. Some people want to watch stuff, right? And this is just giving them another way to interact with our content.
I think this is what we call background usability. So we've started going through our HubShots episodes and just adding this. It's a no-brainer. It just does it. As you said, I think the voices are listenable. They're not terrible like they used to be maybe 6 months ago. They're correct. Actually bearable. They're getting better rapidly. And if you don't want to go over and get our podcast or find it on YouTube or Spotify, and then, but you just want to just set it running in the background in your tab, in your browser, great. There you go. So I'm quite excited about this, and we'll chat further about this when we talk about AI translation a little bit later.
All right. The next AI tool is the AI image generator. This has been available in ChatSpot for a little while. One thing I do think, Craig, is it is getting better, but you use a lot of Midjourney. And so I think there is still a vast contrast between the two. So do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, pros and cons. Midjourney, we've been using it for, well, more than a year now in depth and for our clients. We've got a whole guide on it, so you can download that. It's been very popular.
What's your hashtag, Craig? Never use a stock image again.
Yeah,
is that right?
It's like Midjourney just replaced stock images. It's that good. Okay. Yeah. Now, you need to prompt it well. And of course, there's multiple variations sometimes for that six finger problem that you talk about, you know, that yes. People say. I'm not saying it gets it right the first time, but it produces very high quality stuff. And we do this for a lot of clients. But there's friction there because we're working on a page on their website, you know, HubSpot page, working on, oh, I've got to get an image. Okay. We'll switch out to Midjourney, which has its own interface. We won't chat about that now.
Correct.
That's friction. I'd love to just do it within HubSpot. And so that's the promise of HubSpot's AI image generator. And as you said, it's not quite where Midjourney is, so we don't use it yet. We still use Midjourney, but I'd love to see that gap close where we got to the point where, like, I just use HubSpot's AI image generator. I'd love that. Just makes it more efficient, seamless. And it's also, then it's something we can hand over to clients. At the moment, we still do a lot of the Midjourney generation for our clients. And I'd love, yes. I just don't feel that's something that we should have to do for too much longer. I mean, I guess it is high value getting it right, but it shouldn't be. This should be something the tool does. So I'm glad to see that coming and looking forward to that. It's my guess that by the end of the year, a few short months away, and that HubSpot's image generator will be excellent.
Now, Craig, I did want to say in the image tool is that you'll see, because HubSpot has a integration with Canva, right? Now, you can go to Canva. Canva also has an AI image generator. So I thought, I'm just going to try this out as well. Again, not great, probably slightly better than HubSpot's one, but I still think Midjourney is definitely far, far better. But it's a great place to start. And I think with all of these things, you just have to remember, don't be afraid to try the different tools out. If there is a better tool, use the better tool. The other day, I was demonstrating something in sales is where I used the HubSpot AI tool for an email and then layered that on top of the Grammarly AI tool to make it better. So don't be afraid to use multiple tools to get a great result and to speed up your process.
Yeah, I think that's right. But all of that will change this year, because having to switch out, it's almost like saying, oh, I prepare my content in this tool, then I go somewhere else to spell check it. It's like, what? that's inefficient. Surely that'll change. And it will.
That's right.
It's moving so, things changing so rapidly. It's such an exciting time. The efficiencies that we're seeing change kind of, it seems every week it's better. Now, with the image tools, our team, the Zen Create team, are always checking them. And so every month or two, we put together a roundup blog post where we compare them. And you're right. Yeah, Midjourney is still the best for most of the images we do for clients, but it is rapidly closing. The other tools are catching up.
All right. Talk about AI translations, Craig.
I'm excited about this one. If you've gone to, just think about Google's translation tools. If you've gone to a foreign language website lately and just said translate into your language, I am increasingly finding I cannot tell. I would never know that it was originally in foreign language. Google Translate is that good. It's been very good for a while, but it is so good now. And we're seeing that coming through. So what I'm excited about is just having this built in to HubSpot. I don't think they're using Google's Translate, but other tools doing translation. And what I would like to do, because I know we have listeners for HubShots in Latin America and a lot in Europe and other countries, I'd love to be creating Spanish versions of our episode show notes and also French, just because I'm learning French at the moment. I'd love to kind of use that language as well, but plenty of others. And I'd love to do it automatically and just have confidence in the translation. So we can just do like we do now, the show notes, great, create it, and then just, HubSpot, just create the Spanish version, bang, and publish that as a Spanish version of the blog. I would love that. I think it's coming. I think we're just on the cusp. And that's by the end of this year, we'll be just like, all of these tools are here. And then combine that with the AI narration, which I think only supports English at the moment, but
yes,
it'll support other languages in time. And so then you'd be like, oh, okay, here's the Spanish version. Oh, do a Spanish narration audio file as well. Bang, automatically. This is it. And so what this does, and this is the big unlock, Ian, you and I spend a lot of time preparing this content, this show. I mean, you know, this particular episode, 10,000 words. A lot of effort's gone into this. I think that's where we should be spending our time. That's a good use of our time. But then creating other versions and promoting it and repurposing the content and all that, we're terrible at that. Well, I am. I don't want to. And so our team takes care of some of that. But a lot of this, I feel, is like the real value is creating the initial source content and then slitting it up, mixing it up, other languages, other versions. That's something that tools and processes should take care of for us. And I'm very excited to see that coming.
All right, let's talk about the AI Ads Assistant. This is relatively new and not a part of our focus, but I felt like it does fall under the content part, and initial tests have actually been quite good. I've used it a few times now to generate ads and just even sometimes rewrite ads that we already might have. So if you're actually testing or you've got this very specific thing that you're testing, I think it's a great place to start and a great tool to use just to generate different ideas for copy. So well worth trying to use it. All right, let's talk about the new features in Content Hub. And there's a bunch of new features that are rolling out exclusive to Content Hub. And if you're thinking, oh, I already have CMS, you probably won't get them and they might not appear. Some might to some degree. We've just started playing with some of them. And so this is going to get updated. If you're getting the guide, this will get updated. And as we get more and more items, we're going to start talking about it. So we're going to share with you what we already know and what we've tried. You'll probably see there's not a lot of screenshots in certain areas, but we're going to talk through some of the things that are going to happen. The first one is about content remixing. So this is repurposing content for multiple channels and formats in a few clicks. So the whole idea here is to quickly generate landing pages, ads, social posts, images to reach more customers. And I'm sure it's going to expand into podcasting and so on. But Craig, what is your take on this tool?
Well, this is just another way of that efficiency we're just talking about. We're good at creating the source content. Now go and remix it into other things. Could be ads, could be landing pages, could be just social updates, could be a bunch of things. I feel the tools can do that better than I could myself. So I'm looking forward to this.
That's right. And I think that's going to be a massive part of all of this. The next is podcast hosting. And currently, we don't think of HubSpot as a place to host our podcast, especially our HubShots episodes. We currently use SoundCloud. But it'd be interesting to see what actually happens in terms of talking about this in the terms of hosting it and to see what downloads we get, what stats we're getting from it. And I think this is the whole thing. This, if it could give us better reporting, which on podcasts is often really bad, this could be one of those things that just changes the landscape of podcast hosting. And I think when you talk about combining that with the blog post narration feature, this could be a very interesting tool that could be a part of HubSpot's arsenal when they're talking about content.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It'd be interesting to see how they price it, because at the moment you can host videos in HubSpot, as you know, but I think it's limited to 250, and then they charge for extra packs of, if you have advanced controls, sorry, you can have unlimited videos, but if you use the advanced controls, which is what we'd want on podcast hosting, it's audio file. I'd love to host it on HubSpot and just say, oh, they viewed this page on, this is how many people listen to the podcast right on the page. Interested to see how they package that up.
Craig, there was a podcast feature, and I don't know whether we missed it, but the podcast feature was actually from the podcast to create a blog post or create a content piece, which was then used as well.
Oh.
So I don't know whether we missed that out of the show notes, but
creating written content.
There is, yes. So it's not only just hosting the podcast, but it's actually creating content from the podcast. So just like we're creating the post narration from the blog post, this is going the opposite direction of taking the audio and converting it into a blog post. And I guess in the content remixing, just taking that blog post and then creating the social post and et cetera. So some of the things where we are doing, we could almost reverse engineer the whole process using
content. That's really good, because actually I think I was getting distracted by the next item, which is content library, which is we've got the file manager in HubSpot, but they're building that out. I think it's going to be much more usable, also providing private access externally. At the moment, you can make a file private, but it's only for users, not necessarily contacts.
Correct.
And so HubSpot's going to build out that content library feature. And then I was thinking, oh, podcast hosting probably fits in with that. Podcast will be one of the pieces of content in the library. And then finally, content embed.
So this is the ability to embed HubSpot content in other systems like WordPress, or using it in your smart content and personalizing it on other platforms. And again, we haven't tested this, and it's something more that we will test in the coming months and share with you how best to use it. All right, let's talk about SEO tools, Craig. So we've touched on SEO functionality at the start, mentioning the requirements for websites these days and to be found. But let's dive a little bit into some of the tools that we've been using for many years now, which keep getting better, but some of the things that are already available. So the first thing we're going to talk about is page recommendations. So making sure you've got your topics, your titles, your keywords, your header, your title, your meta description, all of that. It's a really nice way that's been really well implemented in terms of understanding what you have and you haven't done. It even looks at images, links, mobile friendliness is a great one, and then your crawling and indexing. Actually, it's even got more fully featured since I looked at it last. So have a look at the screenshot, because it's actually very good.
I think this is so good. And, you know, people before, if they'd have WordPress sites that have some plugin, Rank Math or things like that, we used to use, and they'd be like, oh, what should I do? This is built into HubSpot, left-hand menu, just shows you, guides you through, tells you what to do. And that we tell everyone, if you're publishing a page or blog, just use it. It's great. It's not overwhelming like some of the other tools we'll come to in a second. All right, moving on. Of course, you can control page title and description. And by the way, whenever you see a little diamond at the top right of any of these kind of boxes like page title, you can click that. It'll AI generate them for you. It's actually pretty good. I've used this for meta descriptions, actually quickly generate a meta description using AI. So that is an area where AI is pretty good. And we've mentioned featured images before. Canonical URLs are important. Language settings, e.g. for localization, takes care of all of that for you. Additional code snippets. We've got an example a little bit later. You might use special HTML for no indexing a page. I'll talk about why I think that's a little bit annoying, but that's separately. But we'll just go through all these tools. The XML sitemap, yes, you can control that. People will say, oh, I can't manage the sitemap. Yes, you can. Per domain, yep, it's all there. And in fact, you can hover over things and remove them from the sitemap. For example, thank you pages. We always take them out of the sitemap. We don't think they should be in there. Normally want to hide them from Google. What about the robots.txt file? If you're a marketer, you might not even know what this is about. If you're an SEO person, you definitely do. Oh, can you control that per site? If I've got multiple sites in my HubSpot portal, yes, you can. Can override it. It's beautiful. We often block things such as proposal directories or things that have, you know, files that we might not want getting indexed. Redirects, I'll just quickly rush through all of these redirects. It's all there. It's a beautiful tool and it does support flexible rules. Doesn't, not necessarily regex, but it does support variables and things in dynamic redirects. We use that in a lot of sites as well. Nice user interface there. Yep, another one of those 1% pieces. Cross-domain tracking. People say, oh, how do we cross-domain? We've got multiple sites we manage in our portal. Can you cross-domain? Yes, you can. What about connecting with Google?
That's right. And so they've made it really easy about tracking your tag manager. And if you're not using tag manager, just using Analytics 4, you can put the code in there. But they've just made it super simple, right? And that's what I love about HubSpot is the simplicity of the implementation to get you the results that you're looking for. We're going to talk about Google Search Console. So this is really important. This is how Google communicates with you. And this is in the marketplace. And once you've added it in, you can connect your account together so you can feed the data into HubSpot. Now, why do you think that's important? Because that data gets fed back into Pages when you're doing the analysis and you can see what keywords, etc., are bringing traffic to your site. But also in the Analyze tab in the SEO tool, it's pulling that data in using the Google Search Console information. So things like search impression, clicks, position data all gets fed into the tool and just this nice place to see it. I think when people get confused is that there are all of these places that they need to go to get different things. And the nice thing that happens is that as the data all flows into HubSpot, you can just go to the one place to see all of that information.
You know, one of the things, because there are so many things we're talking about, Ian, is often people are like overwhelmed. What should I focus on first? What should I do first? That's actually why we built the HubShots framework. It's a 5-stage plan and there's a link at the bottom of the show notes about how to get it. We just tell you which ones to work on first. Some of these, there's all these tools, all these integrations. Some of them you focus early, others you can leave to later. By the way, now that we're talking about the SEO tool, I'm going to have a bit of a grumble here, Ian. So the SEO tool, which I think is in Pro and above, maybe there's some bits in Starter. It's got these tabs, Analyze, Recommendations, and Topics. Now, Analyze, you've just talked about. Pulls in Search Console data. It's great. Really useful. I love it. Really handy. Okay, so now let's chat about the Recommendations tab. And Ian, this is something that I think is unhelpful. I'm going to have a bit of a grumble about this. The intent was good. HubSpot wanted to provide a tool that could highlight issues with your website so that you could fix it and optimize it. So the intent was good, but unfortunately, it's so overwhelming that we get a lot of clients kind of contact us. Oh, I've seen 3,000 recommendations. What's going on? My site's a disaster. Or they see that and they go, oh, just ignore it, all too hard. Now, the problem is Google's kind of outsourced these recommendations to Google Lighthouse, which is a developer tool, really. And unfortunately, since it's mainly marketers looking at this, they get overwhelmed. And half of the things, because they come from Google Lighthouse, you couldn't fix anyway. You know, reduce the size of page network. Like, what on earth does that mean? How is a marketer going to do that and change things?
Correct.
So deeply technical. And to be fair, they do break these down by the role, whether it's a developer or not. Well, what we recommend to clients, because there's thousands that they normally see, is we're like 80% of them you can just ignore. So that, you know, just give you a little bit of relief there. We filter it down. Here's standard how we do it. Only high and medium impact and medium and low technical difficulty and just for the role of marketer. And that whittles it down enormously. And then you'll see things like this. Fix broken external links. Definitely want to fix that. Fix broken internal links. Yeah, definitely want to fix that. Add image alt text attributes. Yeah, kind of, probably. And then make sure all images are sufficiently compressed. Like that's some example. Yeah, want to do that. But I'll say even HubSpot's getting better at compressing images. One of the big problems we used to find is people, oh, they just got this little icon I want to put just on the side of the page and they upload, oh, it's a 20 meg icon file. I didn't realize. How would they know? They're just uploading an image. HubSpot is better at optimizing that, but this tool highlights things. So summary, often useless and concerning, but there are some helpful items with that recommendations tab. Am I being too harsh there, Ian? What's your kind of view?
A tad, Craig, and I'll tell you why. So we do exactly the same thing, right? So when we're talking to marketers, exactly the same process. We do look at the developer things because it does pick up things that might be of concern that need to be fixed, right? So we do then work with the developer to fix some of those things. Now, not everything can be fixed. Some things can be because things change, things get updated, things can be done better, and they might have just missed it. So I think it's a great way to do that. So don't ignore it. Have a look at it. Talk to your developer. Like, for example, because we use the themes that are built by Kevin, etc., we can talk to them and say, hey, do you see this as an issue? Because they'll see this as an issue across a lot of things. And actually what I think has happened over time, Craig, is that the tool has highlighted to people what's not working, and so they're able to address it. So I've seen in subsequent updates, they've addressed issues with page layout, speed of things getting loaded, how they get loaded. And so I think they are getting addressed. So it's always a good indicator of what's going on. Mm. Just be aware of it and get someone, start the conversation and then work out what's next. Yep.
Okay, good call. Finally,
onto the topics
tab. Yeah, the topics tab. Look, it's not as bad, but I actually feel that this topic, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, but I feel that the topics tab, again, the intent was good. Look, let's give a bit of a research tool and then you can plan out your hub and spoke model for content.
Yes.
But really, most people don't know what that is and how to do it. And if they do, they're probably using another tool anyway. If they're quite a senior content person or SEO specialist, they're probably using another tool. So they're probably not using this. That aside, look, I think it can be handy. We do set it up from time to time just to kind of get a sense and plan out content, but we don't use it much. I wouldn't be surprised if they sunset this in the future. What do you think, Ian?
Quite possible, Craig. But I have found it useful. Again, like you said, I found it as a useful way to just focus people on the content. So a lot of people, they go, I have this idea, I want to be known for this. And then I kind of just do a bit of research using the tool. And then we get to see, oh, is there actually traffic? Or are you just barking down a path where no one's really interested in it? So it kind of brings it nicely together. But beyond that, I don't see people actually using the tool consistently to work out what's working and what's not.
Yeah.
It is a good place to start.
Yeah, it is good to start. One of the grumbles I have is that you can't use a piece of content in two different topic clusters, right? So it's almost as though, oh, piece of content can only relate to one keyword term. And so we'll often have – so I'll give you an example. Oh, I've got a content cluster around HubSpot consultant because that's kind of an area you want to build on. Then there's also, HubSpot websites. Now, some of the terms might be across both of those, and we have different, terms and same. We can't do it. I'm like, okay, that's why I'd jump out to another tool, should allow it. But anyway, let's see.
All right. And the final thing is security certificates by default. And you know what? This is another one of those 1%ers. Working recently with a customer who was had a custom app built. And when we went to go live, they got told, oh, we need to buy some security certificates. And it's been a couple of weeks now, Craig. And nothing's happened, right? Because they're like, oh, where are we going to host it? Who has to buy the certificate?
No
with
way.
HubSpot, you don't have that conversation. It just happens.
Wow. I only put this by at the last minute. I thought, oh, we don't need to mention it. Oh, we probably do. Some people. Surely this is table stakes now. How could you not? Anyway, there you go. That means HubSpot's even, it just does it for you. Oh, I have to tick a box, and it just does it.
That's right, and it does it seamlessly. Correct.
Yeah.
When you're doing the domain setup and just the process it takes you through, even connecting. So, example, if you use GoDaddy, for example, the fact that it can connect to GoDaddy and put in the DNS records, even that's a massive benefit because most people don't know how to do that.
We should have put this in the guide as well. Yeah, super handy. All right, that's all the SSL bits. I'm very happy with the SSL. That's all the SEO bits.
The security.
I'm very happy with the SEO features throughout the tool. I think it's actually pretty good.
All right, what are we going to talk about? Marketing considerations of Content Hub. So over this section, a lot of things we're going to talk about might overlap with other sections, but and aren't specifically to website. But we're going to talk about it because this is really important in terms of how people are using it and who the people are that are using it. So what are one of the first things you want to talk about, Craig?
Well, we'll get into the specifics of marketing. I think it's worth just taking a step back and saying, well, Content Hub, part of the reason HubSpot's going down this approach is the website, it shouldn't be some siloed activity on the side. Oh, that's another tool, another team look after the website. And then marketing is here. They might report into marketing, but oh, no, marketing's doing its stuff over there. It's like, no, it should be seamless. And why we're covering some of the marketing considerations is part of the big push of Content Hub. And the value add is that, yeah, marketing and website and content, it's all together in the same system, works well together. So some of the things, let's chat about brand kits. Like, oh, it's brand kits. Oh, that's the way we kind of just control logos, colors, and fav icons and URLs and themes for brand. Oh, great. Why do we do that? Oh, because then the color pickers are default across, oh, the website, oh, and that's the email. There might be other parts. Oh, there's styles all there. Now, it's pretty simplistic initially, but there's a very simple example of an overlap between marketing and website, trying to keep those brand bits the same and a common interface. Now, then there's other things which we'll touch on, like connecting various platforms in. So what's the first one we'll chat about?
The first thing I'm going to talk about is social channels, so ability to connect in your LinkedIn, Facebook. What else have we got, Craig?
YouTube. Yeah, all comes in.
X, Instagram, they're all in there.
Now, there's two things here. One is reporting. I think that's the big benefit of the social tool. Correct. You can schedule and manage it, which we do actually in our portal. We manage it all via HubSpot Social, but there's other tools out there that will happily do social scheduling and management. You don't need it for that. But the reporting, that's great. So you've built your website. What about when you promote your website? Oh, I want to see it all together in one system. That's the first start. What's next?
The next thing is connecting your advertising accounts. So this is a big thing. The ability to pull in your ads from Facebook, LinkedIn, Google is a massive, massive benefit because what that allows you to do is tie it back to your contacts and know what's working. So often when we talk to people, people know what they're able to tell, okay, maybe this for this month we've had this many conversions, but do they know which conversions they are or where exactly they're from? And I think that's the massive benefit of pulling the data in and then tying it back to a contact and what their activity is. And the next thing is leads. Like if you're running lead ads and you don't have it connected in and syncing your leads into HubSpot, you've lost a massive, massive part of the pie here because just like not having to go to another platform to get your data. Everything flows in. You're able to automate what happens when those leads come in. There's all of these things that can take place. And if you don't sync your leads into HubSpot, now you can do it from Facebook. You can now do it from Google as well. Like a massive, massive benefit that you're losing out on. So having all of that connected
is massive. I totally agree. And not only that, they can pull in leads, but they can actually push contact audiences and retargeting back to the platform.
That is exactly right.
You know, and so, by the way, we don't manage our campaigns within HubSpot. I know they've kind of got some ad management tools. We never do that within HubSpot. But we still connect everything for the reporting and pushing the audiences. Correct. Definitely. What else can you connect in?
Can push in your pixels. So if you're using Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, you can push those pixels straight from HubSpot onto the website.
Do you do this? Or how do you push pixels in?
We do it in some instances, right, Craig, mainly if people are using HubSpot websites. Let's call it HubSpot Content Hub. Then we do. If they're not, we generally don't tend to. We use Google Tag Manager to push those pixels onto the site. All right, cookie consent tools, Craig.
So here's marketing meeting website management, okay? I need the cookie pop-up in some countries and not in others. And if it's in some countries, I need it to be more detailed than others. And some are optional and some must be accepted, et cetera, et cetera. That's actually a complex use case. And there are third-party tools built just for this. What's amazing is how good HubSpot's cookie management tool is. It's really good. We use this, on our own sites because some of the sites are targeted on the US and maybe California and some of the EU. And then in Australia, we don't show cookies at all because we don't need to in Australia for Australian audiences. So here's the thing. This cookie tool is so good, and yet we've had clients where they're going, oh, yeah, this is great. Now, I've just bought this other third-party tool. Can we integrate that into our HubSpot website? I'm like, what? What tool have you bought? Like, you know HubSpot's got their own tool. No, they didn't realize. And the other thing that I find bizarre, like I feel sometimes I wonder, HubSpot could just take this whole tool, split it out, they unbundle it out as an optional, just as its own standalone tool, because it's that good. And people would pay money for it. You know what? They'd probably pay more than they'd pay for CMS or Content Hub Starter, I reckon. I actually think this is in most tiers, isn't it? I don't know the cookie tool.
Yeah, I think it is.
So is it even in free? I don't know. We better check that. But here's people complain about the price of Content Hub or CMS Starter, and they'll pay more for the entire Content Hub Starter with just a third-party cookie management tool. And I'm just like, people don't realize how much value. So I think this is fantastic. I know I grumble about some things in HubSpot, but this is one I think is excellent.
All right, let's talk about campaigns, Craig. So what are campaigns? Campaigns are a great place to kind of tie and bring everything together around a specific marketing initiative. So you can include things like all your ads that you're running, the pages that are in there, lists. If you're going to events, physical events, you can use that in there as well. It's a great place to tie everything together. And it just keeps getting better and better. So you're able to see, you can use forms and all sorts of things. Your social posts all tie that into here. And even your automation, that's the other thing. And we have actually covered this in episode 278 about building a campaign in HubSpot from start to finish using the HubSpot campaign tool.
It's so good. I think they've added features in the last year or so where you can clone campaigns, so you kind of have it set up. Oh, yeah, we're going to run that one again next year. Right, let's clone it. It's a really good tool. It's all about marketing being able to quickly see the impact of the assets, see attribution, and whether it's working or not.
All right, on to reporting. And this is one of the areas in HubSpot that really shines with their tools. Normally out of the box, because I like the out of the box options, but also the ability to use the report builder. Now, sometimes people will say, I feel like I'm hitting my head against a brick wall. And yes, we do feel like that when we started. But you know what? Once you get over it, once you jump that brick wall, it is fantastic. Your ability to create reports to save yourself so much time. I was shocked the other day, Craig, when some of the people we talked to that did a quick check said they've got people in sales that spend a whole day putting reports together. I'm like, what are they doing? And this is the whole thing, right? Just the ability to create reports, have it scheduled on dashboards, send it to the people that need to get it every week. Don't waste your time. Just make sure the data is getting in correctly and let the system do the rest for you. So do you want to highlight some of the reports?
Yeah. So look, I think you're right. Custom reports can take a little while to get your head around. But before you get to custom reports, you can just start with the general page at a page level. So you go to a landing page, and then you can have a look at the performance tab. Got a screenshot here. Just shows you page metrics. You can actually look at those page metrics over time, how they're going over the months or years, and then broken down by channel or source channel. So that's really handy. That's at a page level. Then some of the out-of-the-box reports for around traffic, also really good. So you can drill into sources, locations, device types, all of that kind of thing. Again, the source where they came from broken down. And any of these things, you can hover over bar charts to get a breakdown. You can drill into any of them. But here's the big differentiator. You see contacts and customers. And people will say, oh, should I use HubSpot's own inbuilt analytics or Google Analytics? The answer, of course, is both. Because Google Analytics gives you far more flexibility breaking, drilling into custom events on the page. Although you can use marketing events in HubSpot, a bit harder to set up, but Google Analytics, you can drill on into all of that, mix and match. But the big benefit of HubSpot Analytics, you're tying it back to contacts. And of course, once you've got a contact, then you can see the company and then the associated revenue. It's the full end-to-end customer journey, where they started from and then how much revenue they ended up in. And I will challenge anyone to give me that same level of contact level insight using, say, WordPress plus Google Analytics. You just can't do it. HubSpot, you can. Use them both. get to know each of them best, and then finally custom reports, as you said. And custom reports, the great thing, you can join across various objects, such as landing pages, web pages, blog posts, web activities, etc.
And excitedly talking about AI again and the AI assisted report builder, this just works on a single object, right? That's the first thing. It can't do what the custom report builder does, but it is a great place to start if you just want to use it on a single object and get some information.
Have you had much success with this, Ian?
Not much, Craig, but I also say I feel it, just like with any of these AI tools that we're using, the better we are at giving it the prompt, the better the information we'll get out the other end. And so I believe it's only going to get better, but this is a great start. So don't be afraid to use it. It could feel like hitting your head against a brick wall, or there are filters or things that are missing in the screenshot you'll see. But it is a bit underwhelming at the minute. But I'm sure it'll get better.
I can see where it's going. It's a hard problem to solve. I can see where it's going. I think they'll get there.
All right. Let's talk about some developer features, Craig.
The thing is, I have to admit, I'm not really across the developer piece. And we can't really talk much about it. I mean, we use the design manager, of course. We're using that. And we're using Hubble and stuff like that. But when it comes to the deep developer integration, I'm not across it. So we're just going to mention that this is a big part of Content Hub and the whole HubSpot suite, but we're just not across it. So I'm not going to try and pretend. And instead, we're going to point out to friends of ours at various companies, like there's Luke at Modern Visual, or chat with Zoe at Brand Chemistry, and there's a bunch of other HubSpot partners in Australia. When we've got this kind of need, we don't do it. We're just like, all right, we'll get another partner in. And even if it's just some simple kind of custom functionality on the site, we'll just go back to our theme developer. So we've had Kevin build a bunch of different custom modules for various clients for us. We build all the site, and then there's like, oh, I've got this specific little bit of functionality, and it does this, and you do this, and then does this. Oh, great. Kevin does it. He's very quick as well. He's great.
And I think, listeners, one of the things to be aware of, you might go and ask other people and say, hey, I want to build this, and I'm using this theme. One of the benefits of using people like Kevin, who developed the theme, yes, it might be slightly more expensive, but it probably is going to get done way quicker because he understands how everything fits together and he understands what it means in the context of the theme. And I think that's the benefit. Don't get caught up by, oh, it's cheaper somewhere else. Go with somebody that knows what they're doing and pay the extra, because I think you'll get a better result and a quicker result at the end of the day.
I totally agree. He knows the theme. And so when he builds it, it doesn't break next time he updates the theme. We've had this for a bunch of times, like we've done this for a while, and it's none of his custom modules have ever broken down the track. Yeah, update the theme, it's never caused issues. So yeah, I totally agree.
All right, Craig, all of this great stuff about Content Hub, let's talk about some of the gaps in Content Hub.
Yeah, look, no product's ever complete, is it? It's always being improved. HubSpot is no different. They've got a great discussion area, the community forums. We often joke about the community forums because they're like, support kind of say, oh yeah, that's a great idea, it doesn't do it, just go and talk in the community. Oh, okay, so you don't have it. But there's always going to be gaps. Be interesting, by the way, you know that area, the on the forums, if they'll add Content Hub as one of the discussion drop downs. I'm pretty sure they will. But anyway, I thought I'd talk about a few of the gaps that we've run across with most clients. Okay, and the first one is adding Instagram. We get this on almost every website project. They're like, oh, how do I add Instagram into my HubSpot site? Simple answer, you use a third-party tool. We've got a whole blog article on how we do it. We use Curator. It works really well. We've got examples on our own ZenCreate site how we use it. Now, why is that HubSpot's problem? Not really. It's because the Instagram API, the way you use it, you need to do some server-side processing. Obviously, you don't have access to HubSpot's hosting server, whereas if you had WordPress, they'll often have a plugin that can do it on the server for you. So it's not really HubSpot's fault, but it is a gap. And there's no real out-of-the-box solution. So use third-party tool. We actually use it, the free version of it quite often, and it works really well. So I just thought I'd get that out of the way. Every project comes up, we want to implement or embed Instagram. Yep, we make it look beautiful. It's possible. Second, though, this has been coming up a bit more lately around accessibility. So what's accessibility? That's the design considerations you make so that people with disabilities, e.g. vision impairment, can use the site without barriers. So that's important, and rightly so. Now, Content Hub doesn't have any built-in functionality for that. And again, that's appropriate because the requirements for accessibility are different. Government sites have much more stringent requirements versus, say, small business. Also depends on the country. Also depends on, some cases, the state. Like, there's different accessibility requirements in different states in the US, for example. So what do? We actually use Accessibe, which is a third-party tool. We're actually a partner for it now. And it integrates seamlessly with HubSpot. In fact, they have a whole knowledge base how to do it. We've got details on our website about that as well. What else is a gap?
Blocking pages from Google, Craig. And so it's a little bit tedious, but you have to manually place a no index tag in the head HTML under the advanced page settings. HubSpot has a support thing about that. It is a little bit tedious, but it's not overly involved. So you can do it. Once I have taught marketers how to do this, and then they just cut and paste it in future when they want to use it.
The reason I've highlighted this as a gap is because I think other tools do it better. So in WordPress, you can just use the Rank Math or Yoast plugin, and there's various others. You get a little interface like this. You can just tick, no index on this, and it takes care of it. Also, it doesn't put it in the XML sitemap. Whereas you can put that tag, the actual code that you've got, no index, it'll still turn up in the XML sitemap. It's like, this is a simple problem to solve. So I'd love to see it. It's a bit of a gap, catches people out, but anyway, it's solvable, but not ideal. So that's it so far. We've covered so much ground, and we're on the home stretch now, folks. We're going to talk about the tiers and then recommendations as we sum up, but that's a lot of ground to cover. Let's finish it up.
Let's talk about the HubSpot Content Hub tiers, Craig. So as all HubSpot products come to pass, we start with, there is a free version of everything, but then you've got Starter, Professional, Enterprise, and so that'll still remain. And we all now work on the per seat model, which has been recently rolled out across hubs. So we're just going to have a quick overview about each of the hubs and where they sit. So I think if you are talking about Starter, it's really a no-brainer. You've got website pages, landing pages, blog posts. You've also got a lot of the AI tools that we talk about in terms of for your ideation and generation in blogs, etc. You've got full themes in the marketplace. That's a big thing, I think, to be aware of, just the ability to do that and to use those themes and those modules out of the marketplace. You've got basic website analytics, basic SEO tools. Now, we were talking earlier in the episode, there is a limit of 30 pages across landing pages and website pages, whereas previously it used to be 50, but I'm sure this will be tested over time and adjusted as needed. And then you start with a single seat and you can buy additional seats, but a great place to start. Now, when we're talking about professional, here's where it gets interesting. Some of the features that we're going to look forward to and love is the content remixing tools. The content embeds, smart content, if you're already using it, you've got all the SEO tools, you've got A-B testing and adaptive testing, you've got custom reporting, you've got memberships, even though it might be slightly cut down, content staging, massive one, and then you get 3 seats. Finally, we have Content Hub Enterprise, so you have multiple sites. This is a big thing. People often forget, when we were previously talking about websites, the ability to host multiple websites. And when we talk about Content Hub Enterprise, that's going to be a big separator with when people are thinking about things for their business. The approval functionality, the advanced mission functionality, that's a big thing as we move into enterprise. And we start with 5 seats here. Now, there is something else which they're going to sell, which is going to be called, I think, is it called Marketing Plus Pro?
No, it's Marketing Plus, and it's either Pro or Enterprise, and it's a new bundle. So essentially what they're saying is you get Marketing Hub Pro plus Content Hub Pro. They call that Marketing Plus Pro. Or you get Enterprise and Enterprise, Marketing and Content Enterprise. So the plus, I'm wary of this. It's yet another confusing variation on their already confusing pricing model. The number of clients that contact us and say, can you just explain HubSpot's pricing? I'm like, yeah, sure. But even I get confused now on some things. So initially, look, this is going to confuse things, but overall, I actually really like it. because you're essentially getting, and this is the dream, the all-in-one, you know, they talk about all-in-one software.
That's true.
You are getting, for the marketing and website content management, Content Hub, it's across websites plus more coming, as we've discussed, and the marketing things all-in-one. I think this is the compelling bundle to give to marketers. So anyone that comes to us and says, oh, I'm thinking of getting Marketing Pro because I want automation and all that, I'm going to say get Marketing Pro Plus. All the website stuff as well, because it's a discount to buying them each separately. I think it's going to be compelling. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, start building your websites and on HubSpot as well. So I think it's going to be good. It's going to be interesting to see how the market responds to this. We'll see. I guess they've probably done a whole lot of testing of the marketing, but we'll see.
All right. What's our final thoughts, Craig? We've covered a lot of stuff in this episode. We've really scratched the surface. A lot of things that we have spoken about are new. Some of them have been in beta. We've been testing them. There's a lot to unpack. And you know, on this podcast, one of our mantras is we don't talk about stuff we haven't used or tried out. And like we said previously with the developer tools side of it, Craig and myself don't heavily use the developer side. Some of our team use some of it, but we're not experts at it, right? So we pass you on to friends of ours that are actually good at that, or even the theme developers. But really, who is Content Hub for, Craig?
I like to think of this in two main audiences. So there's the existing HubSpot customers, and then there's new HubSpot customers, or they're probably not customers yet, new prospects or opportunities, right? Which is obviously the big market out there. For your existing HubSpot customers, I think this is about interrupting and reminding them that HubSpot does websites. So this is a mindshare issue. A whole bunch of marketing managers, when we chat with them, they go, oh, yeah, look, so we love Marketing Pro and workflows. It's all great. Now, we're going to get a website built over in some other tool. I'm like, oh, why don't you build it in HubSpot? And they're like, what do you mean HubSpot? Oh, you know HubSpot's got a website, Pete. No, I didn't. Like, there's the mind share is not there. So part of this push, especially the Marketing Plus and the Content Hub naming, I think is to get mind share with existing customers. There's a big opportunity there for HubSpot to be, they should be doing website stuff. And it's so good. As you and I know, Ian, we've built, what, decades of building WordPress stuff. We moved all our development of websites over to HubSpot, what, 3 or 4 years ago? And we love it. So it's not something we're just recommending because we're HubSpot partners. We've actually, we walk the talk. We've got all our sites on HubSpot. In fact, I think this is such a compelling offering for customers, their website piece. We've got a whole separate brand called Zen Create we've been building out over the last year. Big focus on HubSpot websites. I'm that much of a believer in it, and the team love it. And so that's the big opportunity. So that's existing customers. It's about mind share and I guess getting in their mind that it is a compelling option. It's not just some glorified landing page tool. It's actually an enterprise website tool. Now, when it comes to new customers, this is where it's also kind of a huge opportunity. I was looking on G2 and they've got at least 370 web content management platforms. Yeah, and if you go in the website builder category, you know, things like Wix, etc., there's more, I think there's 400 or 500. So it's crowded. And HubSpot, even though it's pretty highly rated, it's just one amongst a sea of options. So again, here's this mindshare thing. It's missing. And by the way, over on Gartner's list of web content management companies, I couldn't even find HubSpot, right? So even big industry bodies don't know about it. So I think the push here is Content Hub. They're really trying to get out there and say, look, we do website, we do content. They're even pushing into that whole digital asset management, the whole DAMS space. So Content Hub, the launch of it is just the start of it. They're trying to break that barrier, that mindshare piece, demonstrate that this is a compelling tool for enterprise as well. So that means this is an interruption launch, in my mind, that you can get the benefits of an integrated system to an audience of marketers. I think the main audience is marketers. I don't think it's technical IT people, although there is messaging for them. I think it's mainly marketers, and it's for those that didn't realize that they could do it with their existing HubSpot platform. Or if they don't use HubSpot, that it's an option to do with the HubSpot platform. And I'm kind of really excited to see where this goes. That's my kind of read of the tea leaves. What's your thoughts, Ian?
I think you're right, Craig. It is targeted at marketers. It's just a place to easily manage everything. When you talk about content as a whole, it's the one place to go and you can do it all and you can do it fast. This is the other thing. When people switch and they use it all in the platform, right, their ability to get stuff done at a speed that they could never get it done before is one of the biggest bits of feedback we get. It's easy to use. We can get it done. We have the tools. It's within our reach. We can test new things. So even just the little things. I want to test this. Oh, this page is not performing like I thought it would. How can I test another version of it? Just little things like that. You should see the joy it brings to people's faces where they talk to you and they say, oh, I just decided to run this test and this one's performing really well. I think we're going to switch to this one version. I'm like, thank God you did it and we didn't have to do anything because you had the right tools to get your job done and get a better result. And I think that's the whole thing. Empower the marketers to do what they do best around content and give them all the tools that they need. And that's where this is going to go.
And with a similar experience. So I think you're absolutely right. And you go to a marketer, you go, oh, do you like using the email tool? Oh, yeah, it's great. I just drag and drop stuff on. I build my emails. Oh, would you like exactly the same experience to build a landing page? What do you mean? Oh, yeah, here, go and create a landing page. Same template we set up. Oh, great. Oh, wow. I can just build a page like this. Same experience. Great. That is an unlock for many marketers, and especially in enterprise where they're like, oh, we have a whole dev team or an outside agency that build our website and do new pages. Like, ah, oh, you mean I can just build it myself? Yeah. Oh, is that dangerous? No, because you've got approval process you can build in and you've got a brand kit so you know the colors are going to be set. Oh, and you've got this file manager that can optimize file. Oh, and you update a file and it goes throughout this. Oh, wow. And I can see reporting over it. That's a pretty compelling conversation. I'm excited.
So, Craig, comparing Content Hub to WordPress, let's talk about that quickly.
I think we have to because that's the reference everyone looks at, WordPress. Doesn't matter if they're an enterprise, they're using Sitecore or Adobe Site Manager or whatever. WordPress is really where the mindshare people know. So, how does it compare? And I feel the conversation around success using Content Hub or WordPress, which one's the best one to use, is not really around platform capability. I think it's around people capability. Because I've seen plenty of WordPress sites that were excellent and I've seen plenty that were terrible. And it's not the platform that would change, it's the team that were building it. Likewise with HubSpot, I've seen some terrible HubSpot website implementations, slow as, you know, a wet week. And, you know, just terribly implemented or they weren't using Dragon. Like I've seen them, terrible ones, and I've seen excellent ones as well. So it's not the platform. I would confidently say anything you can do just about in WordPress, you can do in HubSpot. So it's around the resources you have available. So when to switch to HubSpot versus when to stay with WordPress? Well, if you've got a great WordPress site and you've got an excellent team that know how to update it rapidly and keep it optimized, why would you change? I would have a hard time saying, oh, yeah, easy, easy decision. But if you're looking, as many do, oh, we're going to refresh our website this year. We're looking to, you know, update design and everything. It's a complete rebuild. I'd be saying, oh, very strongly consider HubSpot CMS. So it's not really about, we've got something that's working well. Why should I move? Immediate ROI. No, that'd be a harder conversation. But if you've got a terrible website, it's time to rebuild. Yep. Really look at HubSpot. Now, where does it shine? I feel it's not the size of the company. I think it's the type of website. So if you're after beautiful marketing and sales-focused sites, HubSpot is a great fit. And if you're looking at integrating that in your marketing tool suite and doing reporting and attribution across it, HubSpot, it's just compelling. When wouldn't you do it? Well, there's a couple of scenarios we've got because we've still got a bunch of sites on WordPress that I'm not going to bring to HubSpot. Why? Well, one is if they've got a ton of comments, it's very hard to migrate comments from WordPress over. And I think it used to do this years ago, but I think they stopped it. And there's just no, and we've got posts that have thousands of comments on some of my wife's sites. Can't bring it over. E-commerce tools. Because essentially, if you're using WooCommerce in WordPress, moving to HubSpot, you're probably going to move the e-commerce stuff to Spotify. Now, if that's a simple piece, great. And then you can use HubSpot for your main WordPress website. But if not, and we've got a bunch of legacy sites and that, we're still using WooCommerce, so we're not going to move them off WordPress. So I wouldn't try it. And then the other thing is if it's got lots of legacy functionality, you know, just why would I? The ROI is not going to be there in my. Now, that's just our particular scenario. Your mileage will vary. And so it's really about requirements. And the summary for me, I'm interested in your thoughts, Ian. Resources you have available, legacy functionality and content, ROI expectations, and future requirements. Would you add anything to that, Ian?
Yes, I'm going to add one thing, Craig, and this comes up often. And these are people that have websites generally on WordPress. They have a lot of issues with updates that get rolled out, so things break on their site.
Oh, yes.
That's one. The other thing is their hosting is slow. So I say, I often tell people they buy cheap hosting in a, I call it like living in a bad neighborhood where windows get broken, you get things thrown on your lawn because they don't want to pay for the upkeep. And I think, and I know for a fact on HubSpot, I've never heard anybody tell me, oh, my website's running really slow. I can't access it. It's someone's hacked it. You know, they've done something. I've never had that experience because HubSpot's infrastructure is the enterprise infrastructure that we work off and everything's looked after. Like, I don't have to worry about that headache of knowing things are not going to work. I know they're always running. And I know if something does happen, they have the team behind them and you're able to contact them. The support's great. That's a really big thing, like support. Like, people forget.
Oh, that's with all a of great these, point.
We're talking about Content Hub, right? We're talking about tools here. And we talked about functionality and systems. We're also talking about the people behind it and the support we get. We love HubSpot support. We talk to HubSpot support teams that are all over the globe because we know we kind of work in different time zones, so we get to experience them. And you know what? You always get they're on top of stuff and they understand it. If they can't give you the answer straight away, they'll always get back to you. But most of the time, they fix it while we're on the call. And I think you should not forget that if you're considering Content Hub and you think about, oh, who's going to support this? Or what if they've got a question? One of the biggest things I can say is use the HubSpot chat support or the phone support if you're using professional version of the product and get the answer. Don't be afraid to ask the questions because they will point you in the right direction. Now, there is currently, you'll see in support, they're using the chat AI to point you towards the right support article. So it's kind of trying to get you to help yourself. If you don't get the answers, then talk to support, but it's still very good. So I think that's a really big point. So the whole hosting side of this and the updates is another big consideration when we talk to people about migrating to HubSpot because they can spend there are businesses we work with. They've got somebody that spends a whole day or even longer updating WordPress and checking WordPress updates. Now, they don't really count the cost of that in the whole scenario, but they kind of think, hang on, you could have done this and be well on the way to doing other things. There's one person here doing this stuff that really can be done by the system. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Ian. Support. And isn't this the case? We take it for granted so much, we don't even call it out.
Correct.
Or I don't, but you're so right. It's such an important piece, yeah.
Now, listeners, finally, there are resources here as we near the end of this episode. There is a Content Hub overview guide, which is a lot of what we've spoken to in this. And there's a link to go download it on HubShots and then on Zen Create. And it will be updated. So if you get it and you sign up, we will send you updated versions of it. You've also got a guide, Craig, on Zen Create, how to build a website in HubSpot from start to finish. So that's another guide that's well worth getting, kind of goes through the whole process. And finally, if you are using HubSpot, there will be an updated version of the HubShots framework, which includes Content Hub in there. So I encourage you to get the latest version. There is a Google Doc version, if you've already got it, which you'll get reminded of, and you can just create a copy of that and fill it out online. What's next, Craig? Make sure, once you've done that, connect with Craig and myself on LinkedIn and tell us you listen to the show and follow us on YouTube and find us on any of the podcast players that you listen to podcasts on. And finally, I do want to say thank you to all the people that have left us reviews on Spotify that we actually didn't realize. And so Craig pointed it out to me the other day. He goes, oh, did you know we've got all these reviews on Spotify? And I'm like, Oh no. So thank you to all of those, and we're gonna cut them up and we're gonna place them in the show notes for future and call a few people out. So thank you so much for supporting what we do. We love serving all of you in the HubSpot community. Well, Craig, until next time.
Catch you later, Ian.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of HubShots. To get the latest show notes, HubSpot tips, and resources, sign up at HubShots.com. You can also book time with us to help you grow better with HubSpot.